FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's December 5th, 2017. Wow, 26 more days left to the year, and then we're on to 2018, and who knows what happens then. Well, hey, you know, doing what I do, come across all sorts of people. Oh, before we get started, don't forget, participate in the show, join us, send us your emails. Love to get them. I'm going to start reading more of them on the air when I do the show, because I think getting so many great questions and so many great emails by you raising so many valid points. A lot of times I don't even consider them myself until I get that email, which brings it to my attention. So please email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Don't forget Twitter feed @KerryLutz. So meet a lot of different people through the show, all over the world. And some people get inspired and they go start their own websites. They're fed up with the existing exploitative crony capitalist system, if you want to call it capitalist, get fed up. They're working in the corporate world and then they just say, all right, enough. I got to do my own thing. This is not fulfilling me. And one such person is on with us now. His name is Dan Kurtz, fellow Floridian. And Dan, you had wide experience in the corporate world, and now you are doing your own thing. First, welcome. And then how did you finally make the decision to cut the cord, if you will?
Well, thanks a lot, Kerry. It's a privilege and an honor to be on your show. Sometimes decisions are made for you. My last port of call at Credit Suisse, Zurich thematic strategist, CIO office, and they found that the thematic approach that they tried to make work with all the other bailiwicks, fixed income, stocks, currencies, and whatnot, didn't fit in well. And as a result, they discarded it in the entire approach and my efforts and those of others along with it. That brought me back to old stomping ground, Southwest Florida, a little town called Bonita Springs. And since the last, well, say 2 to 3 years, I've been putting together my own website and putting content in from a constitutionalist, rule of law, sound money perspective. And that's in essence what took place.
Hey, so basically you reached the end of the line in your former career and you decided to take control of your current career. So the site is dkanalytics.com. Tell us about DK Analytics.
Thanks. Well, Kerry, it's pretty straightforward. It's a site that focuses on valuations on top down. We no longer can do much bottom up other than to value stocks and bonds. But we're in a situation where obviously the central bankers, central planners have taken over the mechanism we knew as price discovery. We have tremendous misallocations. We have bubbles up the wazoo, pardon my French. And what the site does is it tries to bring this back into reality, use discounting information to figure out where these assets eventually will end up trading, because economics, the laws of economics, eventually trump politics and central banking. And this goes into assets which are scarce, which are vital, which are often manipulated to the downside by the powers that be, that don't want to take attention or the limelight away from fiat currencies, and that are obviously disconnected from the restrictions of above ground gold and silver increases. And that's the essence of it. It's an attempt to give people a sense of where we're at, where we could be going, what the risks are for staying put in bubble bonds and stocks. I think broadly stated, that's accurate. And how to perhaps take money off the table and at the same time potentially capitalize this huge repricing opportunity. Whenever it does come, it will come. It's a question of time, not a question of if. And then, offer some detail and granularity on how to go about doing that from a non-financial advisor perspective. I'm a CFA. I've been in the business for 35 years. but I'm doing this on an opinion-only basis, and I think I should state that for the record as well.
Yeah, well, you know about opinions. So first, you know, everybody's talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. I'm sure you have your opinion on this, Jan?
I absolutely do, Gary. And I would say this. They call them cryptocurrencies, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Currencies are what? They're supposed to be representations of money. And money is a medium of exchange that's supposed to be a good store of value. It's supposed to be, it's supposed to have intrinsic value by itself, okay? It's supposed to be fungible and divisible. And it has all these good attributes that have been tested over time. And if you take a look at cryptocurrencies, to me, I don't think they fit the definition of a currency. They're assets, they're speculations. They're based upon a technology which certainly bodes well for better, more precise commerce going forward. But as currently configured, and also the market caps of these, I'm going to call them bubble assets, because I don't think they're currency. And I definitely think they're a bubble. I mean, if you're up, what, 700-800% in a year, and you don't have any definable top or bottom line, and the question is how is that going to monetize for everybody that isn't, you know, the 95% that hold, you know, I mean, the concentration of holdings is so immense that, in fact, they can steer this and in a way that isn't necessarily conducive to the benefit of all stakeholders.
What do you mean they can steer it? Explain that.
Well, I'm thinking that if you have very tightly controlled, starting obviously with a Bitcoin currency, if you take a company and 95% of the shares or thereabouts are owned by, you know, a small group of people, they're obviously going to make policy that benefits them and doesn't necessarily line up with the interests or is conducive to the parallel interests of the minority holders. I mean, we used to have it in Class A and Class B stocks. Comcast and the cable companies had similar situations. We end up conducting policy which might be good politics for those in positions of power and control, but doesn't necessarily maximize the economic interests of the minority shareholders. And I think that risk is also very much on board here. But, you know, Gary, I think money historically, when it becomes currency, it had a link to silver and gold, right? I mean, if you go back to our Constitution and the founding fathers and what a dollar consisted of, The whole point was that you couldn't get away with the, printing money to in essence have welfare and warfare or whatever other ills, whether it's the, you know, the Mississippi bubble, the South Sea bubble that preceded right. it. You get into deep doo-doo. And I just wonder in an aggregate sense whether these forking or cryptocurrencies are constantly mushrooming cryptocurrencies stand up well to the definition of scarcity as an asset class, whether they're ever going to be usable money in the practical everyday sense where retailers, you know, work with margins of 1% or yeah. else they make a loss and other considerations. I don't know. I think the jury is out on that. Suffice it to say that the current iteration doesn't come close to fulfilling what I would consider currency, much less money.
Uh-huh. So to you, what exactly is it? If it's not a currency, what would you call it?
I would call it a speculative asset. I would call it a bet on making it, establishing a major commercial viability that is conducting large amounts of transactions on it. But that begs the question, is this structure or are these cryptocurrencies, the way they're currently structured, suitable to such a task? Are they stable? Do they have intrinsic value on their own? My answer to both is obviously no. Can they be anonymous? Well, that's questionable. Depends on who you ask. Are they viable from an energy consumption point of view? Also highly questionable. So I'm wondering whether the better solution, frankly, wouldn't be to retie paper currencies to the strictures of gold and silver. And to go that route. And I'm thinking that perhaps, you know, cryptos aligned with gold or silver would come closer to that mandate of representing as currency real underlying money. But as they stand today, I just consider them speculative assets. You'll recall, Kerry, in the dot-bomb era where people were looking at eyeballs and God knows what to substantiate mind-bending market caps. And I think a lot of it is going on here as well. I just don't think traditional valuation methodologies will let you get your arms around that. And that alone, it makes it a speculation, not an investment, in my view, even if you could get at the value.
All right. So it's not money as far as you're concerned. It's really what it's about. Is a speculative, well, you can't really call something that's speculative an investment, can you? I mean, that's the whole point. An investment isn't gambling, right? An investment is something that's hopefully going to generate a return where you've taken into account the margin of error, risk, all of that stuff. So what's going to happen to it then? What's your forecast on where this thing goes? Is it just going to be another bubble, or is it going to be, is it going to go into the mainstream at some point?
Well, I would suggest that a little bit of both, but let me back up 1 second. You mentioned something very important. What defines a speculation and what defines an investment? Well, you're spot on the money, no pun intended. An investment is a venture, or you commit funds over more than a year time horizon, where you have a reasonably good chance of seeing your capital again. So it isn't just return on capital, it's return up. There's also adequate protection against default inflation. That's tabulated in a discount rate with which you value the future as hope for earning streams of such assets, whether they're stocks or they're bonds in the form of coupons. So definitely Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies don't line up with the definition of an asset. Thus, they must be a speculation. There is no other way to define them. And then if we tie that back into currency or money, you earn money. It's hard to do. And you don't want to risk your earnings and the thin margins you might have or what you've been able to bring to the bottom line in a speculative asset. Otherwise, you're going to commit the money you otherwise have in that direction. So from that perspective, to me, it is not suited, as it currently fluctuates, by any stretch to be money or anything close. So I think going forward, the whole blockchain technology could be used to improve efficiencies, transparency. But I don't think as cryptos are currently configured, come close to representing viable currency, much less money or representation for money.
All right. So it's speculative. So in today's environment, what do you think is safe? Because the stock markets are basically reaching or have reached long since speculative valuations, right? So what's an investment now?
That is the $64,000 question. I think we have bonds and stocks through financial repression, the machinations of central banks that are well known, well discussed, whether it's money printing, QE, if you will, or zero or close to zero interest rate policies. We definitely have assets thanks to the discount rate, which has been artificially pushed down by the powers that be to nonsensical levels where you don't have protection against inflation or default, much less a chance for real return. You end up having bubbles, whether it's real estate, whether it's bonds, whether it's stocks. So then the question is ultimately, well, how do I take, if I'm fortunate enough, smart enough, lucky enough, have ridden this incredible bull into the stratosphere in both stocks and bonds, what do I do? Well, a good suggestion is to park something in cash. There again, you have to be careful with bail-in laws all over the place with teeth. And there you do what? If you're a traditional plain vanilla investor, you consider 2 to 3 or short-term treasuries, treasury bills. Because you know the government can print the money or the extension of the government to get them back. That's the one thing. You get out of harm's way. You know, we talked prior to the interview, Carrie, about regression beyond the mean, and maybe I can get to that if time permits. Yeah. But I would say restructure your portfolio, get out of insanely priced stocks and bonds, go cash, and don't put it into a bank because you could get bailed in and become a shareholder of a stub that's relatively worthless in a worst case. And then, and at the same time, strongly consider getting exposure in real money over time, not currencies, but real money, namely physical gold and silver in your possession outside of the banking system.
Okay. Reasonable enough. And you might very well be correct. You know, we have our views here. Everybody's got their views on the topic. So you personally, what do you foresee happening in the financial world in the U.S.?
If are you referring to market valuations, bonds and stock markets, for example?
Economy in general.
Well, I think the economy is obviously suffering from what I referred to a toxic public policy stew. That is, we've moved ever more strongly away from the rule of law, property right protections, sane, solid money, regulatory sanity. You probably are aware, Carrie, that the federal government pushes out over 5,000 new regulations which have the force of law and usurps the Congress, which is supposed to be the only legislative body. So people are tangled up in red tape. There's tax code insanity. There's regulatory insanity. We don't have sound money. We have massive misallocations. We have declining productivity growth and even outright declines in productivity. And we have corporations that have given us nice EPS growth, in essence, through financial engineering. That is levering up their balance sheet to the gills, buying back stock. If you correct the corporate sales for inflation and stock buybacks, there's been negative top line growth. So this whole thing begs the question of when we do have an economic recession, which again is not a question of if, only when. Mm-hmm. And this very weak artificial recovery is very long in the tooth. Then we're likely to get a 50% or greater decline in the earnings residual, which is a 4 or 5% number that gets bandied all about depending upon what the top line does. So I think the markets, especially with that as a backdrop, looking at stocks, for instance, are priced for the moon. I mean, if we take 12-month moving gap-based S&P earnings, we're looking at a PE of 25. Well, let's look at two things. Let's say a PE did an average decline of 30 to 50%. Let's call it 50, given how artificial and how debt-laced and how misallocated this recovery has been, and also how fake, if you will, in a nutshell. Why, then we could easily have earnings per share drop by 50%. And all things being equal, if we still trade at 25 times earnings, we're looking at an S&P 500 at half current levels. If we now layer on top of that a potentially much higher discount rate at some time, born of increasing bond vigilante concerns, then we have, I mean, look, back up the truck for a second. What do we have? We have much greater debt. We have lower productivity growth, and we have artificial earnings or bottom line growth. So if we now are concerned about also on the bond side, these junk bonds, which are government bonds, we could go from 2 to 3% yields on 10 years or 30 year treasury, you know, north in the direction of 5, 8, 10% very easily. It's happened before, which brings me back to the topic of we don't have reversion to the mean. We have financially a reversion beyond the mean. So many people keep talking about the market is a reversion to the mean machine. That's just not true. The mean bond, the 10-year treasury or 30-year treasury average valuation or yield is 4 to 5%. The mean PE on an S&P 500 stock is something like 16 times. But we hardly spend any time there. That's the point. And we tend to go from boom to bust or from bust to boom. And currently, our valuations are all boom level. They're blinking red lights. So what I'm trying to say is not only could we have a 50% haircut in the valuation of the Standard & Poor's just based on earnings declining without a PE compression, but those PEs, or the net present value of stocks that, give you your price, could get very heavily impacted by a return to much higher discount or 10-year benchmark treasury yields. And that could come together to have an even stouter impact on the current valuation of stocks and, by extension, bonds.
All right. So we got to sum it up. So basically, we're not just looking at a return to mean. We're looking at the market often overshooting the mean on the way up and on the way down. And the mean is an artificial number that's created by statistics, averages over time. Even if you say the median, it's still in the middle. And yes. So that's the danger. All right, Dan, it's been really...
Absolutely, Gary. That's it in a nutshell. Yep. Thank you very much.
All right. So, Dan, just tell us again where we find you and what your services that you provide.
Appreciate that, Gary. It's very simple. It's dkanalytics.com. I got real creative and used my first initial and my last initial. That is Dan Kurz, dkanalytics.com. And I'm an informational site. From a constitutional valuation sanity, returns are tied to what you paid for an asset in the first place kind of shop. It's an informational site.
All right. And we appreciate you coming on. Hey, you got a question for Dan, myself? Email us, kl@carrylutz.com. Don't forget the Twitter feed, @CarrieLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Dan, it's been a pleasure having you on. Thanks so much. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, Kerry. I would love to.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.